91.3 WLRN presents Topical Currents. Why are some people so apt to worry about uncontrollable details while others merrily take great risk without concern? Good afternoon, Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman. We'll learn more about some innovative techniques from a psychology specialist in stress and anxiety. He's Dr. Reed Wilson. He was hired by an airline to work up fear of flying strategies. He's on the medical faculty of the University of North Carolina, runs an anxiety and disorders treatment center, and has written numerous books on the subject. The latest is our topic. It's Stopping the Noise in Your Head, the new way to overcome anxiety and worry. So, don't worry. We'll be back after the news. And we're back. It is today's Topical Currents, Joseph Cooper and Bonnie Berman on this Wednesday afternoon. Well, if we didn't worry about things, life could be brutally short. But then again, sometimes we're paralyzed by worry, and of course, there's danger in that.
So it's a balance between safety and stress. With us now is an expert and author on the subject. He's Dr. Reed Wilson, a psychology professor of psychiatry at the University of North Carolina. He's an expert on fearful flyer hangups and many other forms of panic and anxiety.
And we'll talk about his latest book, Stopping the Noise in Your Head, the New Way to Overcome Anxiety and Worry. And Dr. Reed Wilson joins us from Chapel Hill, North Carolina. Welcome to you, Doctor.
Well, thank you, too, for letting me spend a little time with you.
Sure. Are you worried? Are you worried about
your
interview?
I'm a little apprehensive. Yes. Yes.
Okay. Well, I thought we'd begin with a look at the differences and or the similarities between worry and anxiety.
Sure. Well, let's keep it simple. Okay. Think about worries as the thoughts that come up and anxiety as the physical sensations that come up. And of course, they're going to blend together, but they're the dynamic duo here.
So taking that a step further, when does anxiety become an anxiety disorder that requires treatment?
I think it becomes a disorder when it intrudes in our life, when it starts, you know, this subroutine, this pattern repeats itself over and over again, when it intrudes and we don't want it to intrude and it has no redeeming value. You know, worry is supposed to be step one of the problem-solving process. You know, my motto is anything that's worth worrying about is worth problem-solving. But when it's simply worry, it's just naming step one over and over again. And that's when it starts to get into a disorder.
And what are the most common anxiety disorders?
The most common is specific phobias, fear of weather, water, you know, lightning, animals, bugs, mosquitoes. You see, now here we have this thing around the mosquitoes, by the way.
Right, right.
Flying, number one fear is public speaking.
You worked for American Airlines on flying. What were some of the basic techniques you used to overcome fear of flying?
You know, they're paradoxical, which is, you know, people want to be comfortable and relaxed when they get on the plane. And that's just an unreasonable standard to place on ourselves if we tend to be an anxious flyer. The number one thing to be addressing, though, is trust in the industry. There's nothing we're going to get done in psychology if we think the wing's going to fall off the plane or the plane's going to crash. So you've got to be able to trust the industry. And then you need to be able to tolerate the distress that comes with, and here's the key, being out of control, because that's the issue. You know, if somebody comes in to see me and says, you know, I get claustrophobic and I want the pilot to have gray hair and I don't like to be away from my family, but really I just don't like being out of control. We can win that one, because that's what it's really all about. When they focus on some of these other topics, we have our work cut out for us.
Would you say that in our time, living in this global world that we live in, 24/7 news, do you think it's increased our anxiety as a society, even for those who would otherwise not be anxious?
Well, exactly. You know, that's one of the problems. I mean, the two biggest things, I think, this is the first one, which is global. You know, we're a global village. We hear about everything. And we hear about everything. Plus, if I have this little added little predisposition to not be able to tolerate uncertainty and worry, then I project myself into that situation. You know, when we hear about a plane crash, you know, oh my gosh, I could have been on that plane. I'm going to be flying. This could happen to me. So you know, that's the big one. And then the other one is, I think, this perfectionistic, glad-handing, performing. You know, when I work with teenagers and high school kids, they've got to be president of the club and achieve in athletics and so forth to compete, to get into the school that they want to get into, to get the job that they want to. So those are the two biggest pressures, I think, that we have these days relative to 3 decades ago.
Doctor, you have methods in the book where one can practice how not to worry. Explain that for us.
Well, not to worry. You know, it's more like go ahead and worry.
Right.
It's, you know, it's what we want to be thinking about is it a signal or is it noise? You know, signal is a worry pops up and that topic is my responsibility and it's time for me to be thinking about that. And there is a solution. And now, you know, that's worry as a signal and I should be taking action on that. Worry is a noise is like it's none of my business or it's not a problem that can really be solved or now's not the right time to solve the problem. And worry is noise. You can do anything you want with that. You can, you know, put it on a leaf and imagine it floating down a river. You can tie it to a helium balloon and let it float off in the sky. You can write down your worries like a stenographer in the courtroom till you get sick of writing and decide to put your pen down. Lots of things we can do about worry that is noise, but the first step is distinguishing. And it's interesting, just, you know, as soon as you hear yourself worry, if you step back and go, is this a signal or noise, you've done your first intervention, which is you've stepped away from the worry for a moment. Now we've got a little space, we've got a little wedge of time, and we can stick some things in there regarding, you know, how to intervene at this point.
Well, let's talk about your prescription for treatment. You call it in the title of your book, The New Way to Overcome Anxiety and Worry. And I believe it's not the standard recommended treatment that we've heard about. So it's to purposely and voluntarily choose to seek out uncertainty and distress and to purposely decide to scare ourselves and change our responses. So how does this work?
See, that sounds so crazy, doesn't it? I mean,
it's a little counterintuitive.
Buy a book like this. It's like ridiculous. So only my mother would read this book, and may she rest in peace. So, you know, if you're going to learn anything new, you have to tolerate the side effects of feeling awkward and clumsy and insecure and unsure. And that's, you know, that's how you learn Spanish in high school. That's how you learn to take guitar when you're 40 years old. That's how you learn to pick up a new physical skill, that you had to go through that phase. People who are more susceptible to worry are less tolerant to uncertainty and doubt, and they want closure and they want to know. Well, if this is you, you've got to move into that opposite position, which is, and you also have to have an outcome picture. You know, I want to get over this stuff badly enough because, you know, I want to be able to focus my attention on my family or fly to Seattle for the wedding or whatever it may be. So right. having an outcome picture is important. But I also need to say this doubt and uncertainty and insecurity and distress is coming. I welcome it. In fact, I'm going toward those things because I want to be courageous to get to the other side of them. So we've got people who have an agenda to, you know, produce a change but don't want to go through what it takes to get there.
Right.
And I think if I could add one more thing at this moment, a lot of folks, when they come in to get treatment or they read things on the internet, it has a lot to do with mindfulness, relaxation.
Mm-hmm.
And what people take from that is it's important in these circumstances to quiet down and relax. Well, you know, that's what I would call arousal incongruence. I mean, it's like here I'm in a stressful situation. I now have to change my psychophysiology, alter my body so that it cools out in order to address this. And I propose that we should be working in strategies that are arousal congruent. I don't have to relax. I can be anxious. I need to focus my attention. And then we need to work on that focus.
As the director of Anxiety Disorders Treatment Center in Chapel Hill, Doctor, I'm sure you've worked with people with either stage fright or terrible fear of public speaking. What specifically do you have people like that work on?
Well, here we go again. What they tend to do when they are having trouble is they turn inward. How am I coming across right now? You know, they'll pick up a facial expression. They're, you know, worry is very useful. The biggest problem with worry, it is 100% negative. So it's only looking for bad things. And so we have to untrain them around turning inward, and then we have to train them to be able to have that noise in their head show up and continue to perform. I was working with a lawyer a little while ago who was having trouble with his closing arguments in the courtroom. And so here's two things I did with him. One, I had him hyperventilate. And so he's going to overbreathe for 1 minute. He's going to exhale really quickly, rapidly, until he starts to get dizzy. Then have him pop up and begin to do a, you know, rehearsed closing argument. And while he's doing that, I'm going to stand behind him and whisper in his ear, "You suck. No one likes what you're saying. You're confusing."
I'm going to try this on some of our guests.
And so, you know, the combination of getting that kind of rehearsal where I'm, you know, because the fear is, oh, my gosh, if I start getting dizzy again, I won't be able to perform. Yes, you will. Watch. Right. Oh, when I start telling myself these things, I start to get confused. Wait a minute. You can hear those things. You don't have to listen to them. Just keep going forward. Hmm. Don't have to work it all out. Trust that something's going to come out of your mouth that will make sense. But I've got to know for certain. See, that's where they go. I've got to know. No, you don't. If you wait until you must know that you will perform up to your standards, you're going to keep waiting. You're going to back away. And, you know, people can be comfortable and relaxed and with, you know, who have anxiety disorders, but their world gets very small because they keep backing away to get comfortable.
Well, I'm just thinking the other aspect of this is we're always taught to trust our instincts and trust our, you know, intuition. And, of course, our impulse is to protect ourselves. So you're saying that we should really not trust our instincts, our intuition, and flee, but we should just walk into the fire, which is a little, it's a lot that you're asking people to do.
Oh, sure. That's why they pay me the big bucks. I also have to teach them to do that.
Ah.
You know, of course, now I've got a little paperback that costs nothing. So now I'm never going to get any work. But, oh, my God, I'm worried. Oh, wait, let me focus again. But it's not all instinct and intuition. I think we don't want to mislabel this stuff. You know, if I have been traumatized in the past, I, you know, got up and gave a talk and had a panic attack and then leave, or, you know, anything that has been difficult for me and embarrassing for me, then my amygdala, my panic button, you know, anytime I get in a reasonable facsimile of that circumstance, it's going to go into high gear and say, boss, I'm here to protect you. I didn't protect you last time. And so we mislabel that as a cue that we should pay attention to, a signal. And really, we got to go, hey, wait a minute, I understand this. I was traumatized by this in the past. Now I'm trying to approach it again. Of course I'm going to have these thoughts. Of course I'm going to be aroused. While I'm learning these new skills, am I going to be somewhat clumsy anyway? Yes. You know, if you're afraid of the dark and you decide to go into the movie theater to practice being in the dark, you're not going to pay attention to the movie much because you're working. But at least you're moving in the right direction here.
Well, let's invite our listeners. Are you a worrier? Do you suffer from an anxiety or a panic disorder? And how do you cope with the worry, anxiety, or panic? Do you resist it or embrace it?
What are some of your irrational fears, if you'd like to tell us about that? 1-800-743-9576 is the number. 1-800-743-WLRN. Also, email, that might be quicker, radio@WLRN.org.
And again, we're speaking with Dr. Reed Wilson. He's an international expert in the treatment of anxiety disorders and an author. He's the director of the Anxiety Disorders Treatment Center in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, and is adjunct associate professor of psychiatry at the University of North Carolina School of Medicine. I can understand this. If you said what you want people to do is surrender to the fear rather than fight it. That makes more sense to me. Dr. Wilson?
Yes. Is there a question there?
Yeah. Just would you say that that's an appropriate rephrasing of what you're asking people to do?
Well, you know, the surrender is a little more like mindfulness, which, you know, when everybody's stronger again, mindfulness is exactly where you want to be, just accepting what's there and surrendering to, and that's fine, it's okay. But I think surrendering, like you're talking about, is just too difficult a task early on. What we know in the newest research, brain research, which is fascinating, Barb Fredrickson here at UNC is doing this, Les Greenberg is doing this work around, and here's what they have found. If we can conjure up the fear response in the brain, if we can access that fear in the moment, if we can get it going, and then if we can bring up another feeling at that same time that is incompatible with the fear, then that will transform the fear. Now, that word transform is not my word. That's their word. Can I give you an example?
yes, please.
You read my mind. You're good at this, Bonnie. Okay. So I was working with a woman with panic disorder, and she was doing great. She was going up to New York City from North Carolina for the lighting. Well, she was just there and lighting the Christmas tree in Rockefeller Center, right after Thanksgiving or so. And so she wanted to be there. She's hanging out, watching them ice skating, and people started to show up, and more people came, and more people came, and more people came. And suddenly she found herself packed in the middle of about 2,500 people, and she began to panic. So because they're, you know, panic disorder is being trapped and out of control. And then suddenly she felt a tug of her pocketbook. You know, okay, well, I'm in New York City. I'm this little country girl from North Carolina. Somebody's trying to steal my pocketbook. And she jerks the pocketbook angrily back into her chest. And, you know, no one's getting my pocketbook. And she turns around. Well, the fella behind her accidentally had hooked his umbrella into her, you know, her strap. Okay. And it was nothing. But she said, you know, then my panic was gone. And then I was fine. You know, there it was. She, you know, had a spontaneous access of an emotion, anger, incompatible with fear, and it dissolved the panic right away. Uh-huh. That's what I'm talking about. So what I don't talk about anger in the book, but I talk about seeking it out. I want this feeling. And that is the opposite of what everyone does, which is I want to get rid of this feeling. And getting rid of it, it's like, you know, pushing your child or your grandchild on the swing. If you when you push that swing to make them go higher, you're adding fuel to the fire. You're adding energy to the system. And so when we go to push away symptoms, they come back with the vengeance. Mindfulness is just putting my hands behind my back and not pushing anymore, and slowly that pendulum stops. We're doing it a little differently here, which is I'm jumping on to the cable, standing on top of the bob, and you will slow down more quickly. I'm seeking out what it is that I do not want. That's crazy.
How does this apply to the old adage, when in the jungle, run for the roar?
Exactly that. That's one of the lines I put in the book too. It's like run towards the roar.
Must be the last. It might be the last thing you hear.
Yeah.
Well, metaphorically speaking.
I want to take another example. Okay, so a single mother, three children, struggling to make ends meet, keep her employment, roof over their heads, food on the table, clothing her kids, constantly anxious about her situation with good reason, doing everything possible to address her concerns. She continues to worry, but I think, again, with good reason. How would you treat that kind of anxiety?
Yes, perfect example. And she it's legitimate worry, and she's supposed to worry as a signal to take action. But once she has got a plan in place, worry is not allowed to nickel and dime her all day. That's where this is where we want to get big. It's like, wait a minute, you do not get to show up in my mind anytime you feel like it. So we want her to be taking action. We want to get job training if she can. She wants to feel if she can get some kind of grant for whatever might help her out to get a new position. And then she needs to be able to have her mind clear so she can attend to her kids and study the new manuals of before the job interview and whatever it may be. But that's a perfect example. We all have worries. We just can't let them run roughshod over us all day long. So we do want her to be able to go, you know, some reasonable facsimile of not now.
Okay.
Be quiet. You know, there's two ways to do it. You can firm things up with that worried voice that comes in with a, you know, kind of firm not now. Or you can support that part of you that feels more fragile and insecure and go, totally understand why I'm anxious right now. And let me turn my attention. I've got my plan in place. I've got my notes. Here's the outline of what I'm doing this week. I don't need to be thinking about this again. I can set this down and focus on these other tasks of my day.
Let's take a telephone call or two from our listeners. We're with Dr. Reed Wilson. And when we do go to calls, Dr. Wilson is really only giving general information and not specific medical advice. So keep that in mind. First caller is Tara in Palm Beach. Hi, Tara.
Hi there. How are you?
Good.
Thank you so much for taking my call. I've enjoyed listening to your show so far so much. I guess my question is this. I'm guilty of being a little bit of a worrier, but I just like to be constructive and proactive, and I just love everything I'm hearing on this program. The question again is, went to my doctor, and I said, goodness, never had these issues before where I'm actually frightened and thinking I might be having a heart attack or something. He basically said, look, you're going through perimenopause and everything seems to be fine. And so I was wondering, I know medical questions aren't really what we need to do right now, but is there something to the truth as far as that's concerned?
Well, so you're not 16, apparently, Tara,
because
you have such a nice young voice.
I'm 49 years old.
When when I see someone who is your age, who's just begun to have panic, I'm going to check out a physical problem first. Because panic disorder, unless something dramatic has happened in your life, doesn't really show up that late in life for most people. The idea of perimenopausal phase is of interest, and we've certainly seen that too. And, you know, it can be coming out of the clear blue, and I've worked with women who are very active, very strong personalities, suddenly this is occurring, and that would make me suspicious of wanting to follow that. You know, anytime anybody who has symptoms like this, first line of defense is to go to your physician and find out if there's any kind of physical problem going on. The only drawback of doing that is the gatekeepers, you know, they sometimes they want to help you so quickly that they'll write a prescription for you and hand it to you and fail to tell you that there's some other options out there besides just medications. But if that's what your physician is saying to you, I'm not sure it's just don't worry about it. I wouldn't then go there. You should find out what she can do for you about that and also learn some skills.
I want you to know I'm so grateful to have tuned in at this time. I'm a regular listener of this program. But it's, you know, regardless of perimenopause, menopause, whatever age I am, I can't wait to go buy your book immediately. And so thank you very much.
Okay, Tara.
Okay.
Being on the show, wish you both a good day.
Thank you. You too, Tara. Thanks for calling. Bye. We're speaking with Dr. Reed Wilson, an international expert in the treatment of anxiety disorders and the author of Stopping the Noise in Your Head, The New Way to Overcome Anxiety and Worry. We'll be right back. Yes.
You're going to go somewhere.
We just need to take a break. Okay. We'll be right back.
And we're back with Dr. Reed Wilson. It's today's topical currents, Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman. And Doctor, before we took our break, you were going to add something.
Well, I didn't quite get to finish that comment to Tara. If her physician is saying, you know, perimenopause, don't worry about it, that is not a complete answer because that's not fair to Tara. She really can learn skill. I mean, if they're not going to place her in some hormone augmentation, then she needs to learn some skills about how to handle these things when they come up and not just like tough it out, because we will do the wrong things automatically, all of us, if we don't really pay attention to what really is going on when we start getting panicky like she was getting, where she's thinking she's having a heart attack. Mm.
Doctor, what's the best way to cut back on really the kind of senseless worrying about things you have no control over, awaiting for medical test results, awaiting your grades.
Terrorism.
And you're miserable about something you have no control over, or that when you get bad news, then you can start worrying, but we tend to worry beforehand.
Oh, just all those? Well, those are not...
Pick one.
Those are complicated. So, you know, again, as we were using that example around a mother, single mother with kids and not having a job and needing money and so forth, there, that's that same kind of circumstance, which is, you know, first off, the senseless, you know, the things we don't have control over, we need to set down. And it is true, you know, for some people, they just need to not be watching TV all the time and not be reading all the articles. And I've been working a little bit with people in Great Britain around Brexit and what it's all it's going to do for them. And, you know, yes, go see your financial advisor to get some questions answered around what you should do with your money if the stock market's going to crash. But other than that, some of these things – you know, whether a major corporation is going to leave London is none of your – there's nothing you can do about that. So you've got to sort through a little bit. I can handle this. I can do something about this. There's actions I can take. This is none of my business. This isn't time for me to think about it. You know, if I woke up at 3 o'clock this morning about doing this interview – worried about how it's going to go, you know, first off, I think I can pull this off pretty well. And second, I've declared 3 in the morning as sleep time, and I'm going to be up at 5:30 anyway. I'm going to have plenty of time to be thinking about it before then. And 3 o'clock in the morning is sleep time, so I need to set it down at those times. So there's something we need to do around setting stuff down. There's something we need to do about sorting through what is something I can solve and what is not. And then there needs to be something around clearing away that stuff so I can focus on what's important to me right now. So then the last thing I would just say about that is sometimes people lift their eyes too far in the future around worries, and they just need to lower their eyes to what's going on at this moment. What do I want to do in the next 15 minutes? What can I do to focus my attention that would be productive or enjoyable?
Well, maybe this can help Lee, who writes, "Never thought I had fears or anxieties. However, my mother passed away of cancer at a young age and had an aortic aneurysm prior. Now every time I feel fatigued or a pain in my sternum, I get freaked out. It's crippling me with fear and anxiety."
And yeah, well, so there we are. His mother dies at an early age, and Lee, in unconsciously even, says this is a reasonable facsimile of what went on with my mom. Is this the first stage of that? And he goes into kind of an alarm, and that worry shows up. So the first step is to be able to – the first step is to step back and recognize what might be driving this in me, that I am oversensitive to this topic. The second is, when those thoughts pop up, be fine. It's totally fine that I'm having these thoughts right now. Now I'm going to set them down. Right? We got to, instead of going, oh no, there are those thoughts again, that is not helpful whatsoever. In fact, that just digs us in deeper. So that kind of welcoming of it's fine, I just had those thoughts, because I tend to be a worrier about this theme. And then, of course, Lee's been checked out by his physician. He knows he's got good heart health. We can all assume that that is true, and yet he worries anyway. So he's had enough reassurance, certainly, and he's got to recognize this is going to happen. It's totally fine that it shows up for me, and when it shows up, I'm going to let it go. Now, the whole concept of letting go, that doesn't mean now it's gone, right? But again, the work is moment by moment. Right. When the thought pops up, I'm not going to embellish it. I'm not going to run with it. I'm not going to argue with myself about it unless, you know, some very simple reassurance helps me let it go. I'm just going to let it go. If it comes up again 20 seconds later, I'm going to let it go again.
You know, we have lots of callers, which we want to get to, but I just need to ask you if you're in favor of, or if you approve of, pharmacological treatments, either alone or combined with other therapies.
You know,
because you mentioned
70%.
Go ahead.
Yeah, 70% of the people I see come in to see me already on medication. So I embrace current life, and that's how it is. You know, if somebody came in to see me and they had a prescription in their hand and they hadn't started to fill it, and they weren't, you know, they could go to work or go to school tomorrow, it wasn't in a crisis, then I might say to them, would you give me a month working with you? Let's see if we can work on these skills. Because most medications, if you're going to start taking them, you want to take them for a good 6 months to a year to give them a fair shot. And if you're going to go down that path, then, you know, you want to make sure you've tried other things first. What we know from the research is cognitive behavioral therapy, which is the kind of stuff I do, works really well. A combination of cognitive behavioral therapy and medication works really well. What's third on the list down there at the bottom? Medications alone.
Okay.
And so I would encourage anybody who is on medications to try to check out some other options here so that they're not only relying on medications, unless these medications are working beautifully and everything's fine and they don't need to, they don't mind staying on them.
Okay.
And back to listeners. Next up, Carol in Boca Raton. Hello, Carol.
Hi, yes, Thank you for taking my call. So my situation is I suffered from anxiety attacks back in my early 20s, around college age. But I really thought I was over them until about 4 years ago. I was driving on the highway, and something got into my head, and I had a full-blown attack while driving on the highway. And so for the past 4 years, I have been afraid to drive back on the highway.
And
I just avoid it at all costs. I drive back roads everywhere.
Okay.
Sure. And so, you know, here we are again. She had panic disorder when she was in her 20s. Now she's driving, you know, 4 years ago, she probably had a panic attack while she's driving and go, could I have lost control of the car? Would I have, you know, wrecked into other cars, killed other people? This is horrible. I don't want to do this anymore. And so, you know, she's got to decide. Here we go again around if Carol says, look, I'm fed up with this. I want to learn to drive again. I'm not going to let this panicky stuff stop me anymore. Now that's step one. She's got to have some commitment. Then she's got to find a strategy that she feels like will work for her to do that. And we, you know, we can do this in a stepwise fashion. We can teach her, you know, skills that we're talking about now. We can teach her some skills like that. Then she can experiment with some things. She can just get on the highway and go one exit and then get off and then turn around and go back the other direction and for 45 minutes do one exit back and forth until after 45 minutes she goes, can I stop now? I'm getting so bored with this. You know, again, all of a sudden she's got a different emotion instead of panic. She's going, okay, 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 I can do this exit now. But now she started to collect a little data like I can handle this. It's tricky when you have panic attacks. I'm not trying to be I have to be simplistic on
right,
the show,
right.
But you know, it's tricky. You are afraid that something terrible is going to happen, and so again, we can do it in a stepwise fashion. Carol, you can do it. You can. So I have a book called "Don't Panic."
You're absolutely right. When you said have the commitment, I thought I'm a 40-year-old woman. This is ridiculous. I'm letting this hold me back. This fear is holding me back. But
right,
I don't know
her
how to move forward to change it.
Okay, but I have a book called Don't Panic, and so that's the book to get to read. I'll explain exactly what to do. But here we go again. Number one, she has to have a goal that's bigger than her fear. That's you know, it's okay to have fear. You just have to have a goal that's bigger than it. And then she has to be courageous because this is not confidence. Confidence is knowing you can do it. This is being scared and doing it anyway because the approach makes sense. You know, the skill that she's going to try makes sense, and she wants to push through. Those two things are what we want Carol to find.
Okay, Carol, thanks so much. Good luck.
Thank you.
We're speaking with Dr. Reed Wilson. He is the director of the Anxiety Disorders Treatment Center in Chapel Hill and the adjunct associate professor of psychiatry at the University of North Carolina School of Medicine. He's written Stopping the Noise in Your Head. Our last break. We'll be right back.
And it's today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, and Dr. Reed Wilson. We're talking about his book, Stopping the Noise in Your Head, The New Way to Overcome Anxiety and Worry. He's joining us from Chapel Hill, North Carolina. Next caller, we've got Bernie in Fort Lauderdale. Bernie, hi.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, good. First of all, doctor, I have so much love for you because anyone that all they want to do is help people, that is a beautiful thing. And one of your callers made me think about how every moment is a moment of growth. She said something like, oh, I was so glad that I turned the radio on. That just goes to show that every moment is a moment of growth. And I just wanted to make this one comment about, I play jazz music, and in order to play, you go through a lot of stage fright and fear. You know, can I create music on the spot in front of all these people? And one of the things I had to learn was that when I'm playing, just to wait for the next note. not even think about it. Just wait for it, and it'll come. And that was a big thing for me to learn. And I'm just going to stop it right there. There's so many things you make me think about, but anything you can comment on what I just said, thank you so much.
Sure, thanks, and that's what, thanks, you know, Bernie. Bernie's making a comment like we were talking about with the lawyer. It's like, let me just get up and open my mouth and things will work out. And, you know, improv comedy is this way. It's like you just get up there and you try to say yes to what comes at you and trust that something will come out and not have a lot of, you know, once you get that critic in there, then things start to get spoiled.
Would you say that a large number of the people who suffer from anxiety disorders did experience a past trauma?
Well, not that caused the disorder per se, but almost every disorder has traumas within it. If I'm driving down the road and have a panic attack and think I'm going to die, that's a trauma. If I get up and give that speech and run off, that's a trauma. So all of these can, you know, socially anxious people have traumas in their interactions with other people and so forth. So, and of course, post-traumatic stress disorder is clearly built out of either being traumatized ourselves or watching a trauma. I just was sat next to someone who went into a full seizure on Sunday, and although I know about seizures and so forth, I was totally caught off guard that this was happening and just went into, you know, about 4 or 5 seconds. I was saying, oh, well, she's faking this. It's like I couldn't wrap my mind around it. But it's very vivid in my mind right now. And when she, somebody I knew, went to speak up again, that generated the first seizure. I kind of gritted my teeth at that moment. It's like, is it going to happen again? Of course, she was on medication at that point.
Do you work with military personnel?
I do. It's not my strength. We have other people in our practice who do PTSD who are trained in the military. So,
and we'll move along to Peter in Boca. Peter, hi.
Yes. Thank you, and coincidentally, it's a military call. Thanks for taking my call. I'm one of those agnostics, not necessarily aboard on the corrective treatment. I'll give you just a 15-second version. I had a run-in with some sharks during some very specified military training, and the corrective action they sent me to see a psychiatrist was to go back in the water and slowly adapt to the sharks. I said, you know, that's ridiculous. This is not something I'm smoking.
Wait, we just lost you, Peter. Come back.
Okay.
We just lost you when you said they asked you to go back in with the sharks. This is not something.
Just move your
right. It's not something that is like smoking. Not to demean that. I know people have a time. Correcting, you know, an addiction to smoking, planes or things like that, or flight. But this is life and death. So in my mind, just common sense told me, going back in the water is not really where I want to correct my adaptation to sharks. You know what I'm saying?
Okay, Dr.
Wilson. Today, I just avoid the water. I go in up to my knees, and that's it. I just don't go in all the way.
Okay, Dr.
That
Wilson.
Doesn't sound too bad.
So, two things. Well, that's fine. You know, Peter's decided he doesn't want to go back in the water to adapt to that anymore, and the world can get by without Peter going back anything further than over his knees. Peter's made a decision. No sweat. Totally fine. I was working with somebody yesterday, though, who had been pulled under in the ocean, and she has panic disorder, so she has trouble driving and so forth. And she got coaxed in by her boyfriend into the water this past weekend. And I'm saying, for her to go back into the water is a useful practice because she can control how deep she goes, she can pull back, and so forth. So it's a great practice environment for her to learn to tolerate some of this distress. And the second thing that I was saying to her, instead of having her boyfriend coax her into the water, she needs over time to learn how to talk to herself in that same manner. She needs to bring that inside so she's not dependent on him.
Of course, also,
and she will do this.
Isn't there the fact, though, that some people shouldn't be driving on the highways? And,
well, in South Florida.
And they shouldn't, you know, work so hard to get back on the highways. Maybe they ought to stay away from the wheel.
I don't know who you're talking about in particular, but if you're talking about the drunk drivers, I agree with you.
Yeah.
And okay. Next up, Lori. Lori, is that you in Weston?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, go ahead.
A lot of noise.
Okay, I'm sorry. I don't know why, but can you hear me all right now?
Yes.
Okay, so Dr. Reed, here's my question. I have a son who is a teenager. Well, he just turned 20, actually, but he's in college. He didn't really have any problems growing up, but he got diagnosed last year with generalized anxiety disorder, and it has paralyzed him in many ways. But will your program help him? He has difficulty addressing tests in college. He has difficulty going anywhere without his girlfriend, who's lovely, but who has become like his crutch. He has all kinds of difficulties, and we don't exactly know what caused it. But a generalized anxiety disorder, I'm wondering if there's some way for your program to help him.
Well, first off, we have to, you know, people can throw away around that term generalized anxiety disorder, and so we want to make sure that it literally is his diagnosis. But, I mean, this book is built on generalized anxiety disorder because it's all about worry. Generalized anxiety is about worry, and people have to worry about out of five topics: money, work or school, relationships, health. And 91% of people with generalized anxiety check off the question, do you worry about minor things? So they are worry-making machines. And so that's exactly what we're working on here. And it can be helpful to him. He just has to be willing to either listen to it or read it.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Well, thank you, and all the best to you, Laurie.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
So, Dr. Reed, you just talked about talking to oneself, and that, you know, you say we need to change how we talk to ourselves. I assume you mean in our heads, first of all. And how common is that kind of self-talk? We just have about 2 minutes left.
Oh, well, you know, 96% of the adults in the world say they talk to themselves throughout the day. We talk to ourselves about 25% of our waking hours. And we want to be doing two things. We want to be either motivating ourselves or we want to give ourselves instructions. And that's where we want to be moving. And we know, you know, they do this all the time in sports. We you know, I'm a competitive rower, and I've got all kinds of things I have to say in my head, but they're basically instructions. You know, watch his shoulder, you know, flip the paddle, all of those instructions to help us move forward. And self-talk is a cornerstone of the work that I do because it represents, this work is really about principles. You and I have been talking about principles today, but they need to be manifest down to moment by moment instructions to ourselves and support to ourselves as a way to push ourselves into what we're afraid of. We have automatic thoughts that come up and say, don't do this,
right.
This is wrong, I shouldn't get on the highway. We have to override those with positive self-talk.
I'm thinking a lot of this is like just taking back control of what we're telling ourselves, taking back control.
Absolutely.
Of letting this stuff control us, that we take control. I want this feeling, whatever the case may be.
And we have to get bigger. These people become victimized by symptoms that just slap them down. You can imagine, you know, Tara feeling like she's having a heart attack.
Right, exactly.
You know, Carol thinking she's having a heart attack while she's driving on the highway. So we get victimized by these terrifying experiences. We have to get big and take territory back.
Dr. Reed Wilson, international expert in the treatment of anxiety disorders and author. He's the director of the Anxiety Disorders Treatment Center in Chapel Hill and the adjunct associate professor of psychiatry at the University of North Carolina School of Medicine. He currently serves as the expert for WebMD's panic and anxiety community. His latest book is Stopping the Noise in Your Head, The New Way to Overcome Anxiety and Worry. Thank you, Dr. Reed Wilson.
Thank you, Doctor.
Oh, it's been great fun.
We've enjoyed it.
And that wraps up today's No Worry Edition. Our lead producer, Richard Ives, technical direction from online coordinator, Jason Zapka. Polly Landis is associate producer. And it's easy to make use of our website. That's WLRN.org for more information as well as free audio downloads of Topical Currents. Send a link to a friend. Also find the Topical Currents Facebook page for more links and photos.
We have a new photo.
Indeed we do. Tomorrow's program begins with a look at the new Waze local transportation app that's making waves. Miami-Dade County is now a partner in the two-way transportation update program. Also, Linda Gastenheimer's Food and Dining. The topic is modern oyster farming. We'll be tasting them. Bonnie's allergic, though.
I will not be tasting them.
Joseph Cooper and Bonnie Berman, thanks for listening. Stay tuned for Here and Now, next from NPR News.